Chapter 9. St. John of the Cross before leaving with St. Teresa for the foundation of Valladolid took the habit of the Reformation in the speak room of Medina del Campo in the presence of the foundress. This is stated by several witnesses, and especially by Dr. Alvaro de Marmol, Isabella de Santiago, Constanza Rodriguez, Juan Lopez Orsiero, and Catalina de Jesus. But until he went to Duero, he did not continue wearing the habit of the Reformation for, as we shall see later, after having said the first Mass in Duero, he put the new habit on the altar, blessed it, and then clothed himself with it. St. Teresa went to Valladolid to make the foundation there, and took with her Fra Juan that he might see the way in which the rule was kept. In Valladolid, the nuns had to live for some time in a monastery unenclosed, on account of the workmen in the house. This enabled him to see better their ways. While he was thus, in a manner, a novice a second time, St. Teresa was engaged in getting the necessary permission of the provincial Fra Alonso Gonzalez, who came at this time to Valladolid. He was not willing to accept the new foundation under his jurisdiction, but the Bishop of Avila and his sister, Dona Maria de Mendoza, friends of St. Teresa, came also to Valladolid, and helped her to the utmost of their power. The two provincials gave their consent at last, moved not a little by some difficulties of their own, for the removal of which they wanted the help of the bishop's sister. This opportunity of learning the holy customs and manner of life in the Reformation of St. Teresa, and the privilege of the most intimate communication with her, were acknowledged and repaid by Fra Juan, not only with the rare example of his holy life and heavenly conversation, but also by giving both to St. Teresa and her daughters the spiritual nourishment of conferences, hearing confessions, and directing them to the highest perfection. With this he began his intimate and lifelong connection with St. Teresa as her spiritual son and master of herself and her daughters. He was the first confessor and spiritual director of the Discalced Carmelites, fathers and sisters. Every hindrance was now removed. The foundation of the first monastery of the barefooted Carmelites was not only possible, but legal according to the constitutions of the order. And it was made with the full sanction of the general, to the great joy of those who were about to begin the reform of Carmel. St. Teresa and her nuns, with their own hands, made the habit of the first friar of the reform, Fra Juan of St. Matthias. With that habit, but not wearing it, and with the means of saying Mass, he left Valladolid for Duero. One of the workmen employed in repairing the monastery of the nuns was sent with him, because his service would be greatly needed in the ruined house which was to be the cradle of the reform of the friars. When he was saying farewell to the nuns, he said, before all the sisters, "Mother, as you are the cause of my undertaking this work for the service of God, ask him to give me his grace, that I may commence it for his glory, and on it, on myself, bestow your holy blessing." St. Teresa, with her nuns, wept tears of joy at the humility of the father, and promised him their prayers. Then, falling on their knees, they begged him, who had been their spiritual father and confessor, as the priest of the Lord, to bless them. Fra Juan took leave of the saint, and went to Duero to lay the foundations of the reform of the friars of Carmel. He had never seen the house of Duero, which was to be the first monastery of the order, until he went thither to take possession of it in the autumn of 1568. Its poverty-stricken condition had an irresistible charm for him, and he entered it with joy in his heart, because he found his true rest on earth. He began at once to put the house in order. First of all, he made the church in a little porch of the house, which represented the stable of Bethlehem, where our Lord was born. The only ornaments of the church were a number of crosses made of branches of trees, and as many skulls as crosses, which caused both horror and edification. The choir was in the garret over the inner chamber. It had a little roof sloping on both sides, so low at the ends that one had to kneel to go into the apartment. The window was a little hole in the roof, which was opened and closed by a tile, so badly fitted that wind, rain, and snow had free passage in. At both ends of the choir he built two little cells, so narrow and low that the dweller had to stretch out or kneel down in them, because they were at the ends of the garret. He spread a little straw in them to make them more like the stable of Bethlehem. He supplied stones for pillows. A cross and a skull were the precious furniture of these cells. Each one had a little window looking to the tabernacle, the most pleasing vista possible for the dwellers therein. The domestic part of the monastery had less grandeur than the church and the choir. The small room under the choir was divided into two or three little cells, adorned with the same furniture as those already described. The little kitchen of the old house was divided into two, one being used for kitchen and the other for refectory. The furniture and kitchen utensils of these departments were happy indeed. In the refectory, he placed a piece of rough board for a table. A broken pitcher and pumpkin shells served as dishes. The kitchen boasted a couple of old pots which were used not very often. Such was the whole monastery as our Holy Father prepared it for the cradle of our holy order. When the work was done, it was late in the evening. Fra Juan sent the workman who was with him to the village to beg for food, for there was none in the monastery. The people gave him some broken bread, and with this they broke the fast of that day. The greater part of the night, notwithstanding the labor of the day before, was spent by Fra Juan in prayer. In the morning, having prepared the altar, he said Holy Mass. The habit he had received from St. Teresa, he laid on the altar and blessed it, and at the end of the Mass he put it on. He had no shoes, nor stockings, nothing to protect his feet from the ground. He was as poor as man could well be, and in as poor a monastery as any in the world. Outwardly and inwardly detached, he fell on his knees, and with fervent thanksgiving, commended himself and his work to our Lord through the intercession of his most holy mother, who had been his singular protectress from his childhood up to that day.